I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball. We kind of have a unique All Ball this week. We'll try and drop one in the coming days as well, focusing on one of the other Hall of Fame inductees. But my late head coach, Eddie Sutton, is going to be inducted this weekend into the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. So what I did was I reached out to a couple of my former teammates who I'm good friends with, Desmond Mason, Adrian Peterson, and Brian Montanati. And I wanted them to join me. And we just kind of talked about stuff. And to get it, for you to understand what our experience was like, for you to understand what playing for him was like, and why we all believe he belonged in for a long time, and why we're so happy that he's getting in posthumously. But he did find out while he was still alive, and he did know that he was getting in. It was an incredibly special and poignant moment. I usually do a rant and talk ball a little bit to open, but I just don't think the timing of that is great with this particular pod. So just a little heads up. At the back end of it, I give you a couple of my thoughts here as we're heading towards the NBA's postseason. But without further ado, Eddie Sutton, my dad coached with him at Creighton in the 60s. And I've told some of these stories previously on All Ball, and we have so many episodes. If you want to, if you ever want to have fun and you enjoy these and you've missed, you know, there's a two-part with Scott Brooks, which was like 2 years ago. It was kind of unbelievably good, like how open we talked about getting called up, cut, traded at different parts in his life, all the different stuff he's been through. It's amazing. Jay Billis was incredible. Nick Nurse joined me a couple years ago when he first got the Toronto job. Like, we have, you go back through the annals of it. It's pretty awesome. But let me give you kind of my sense. When I got to play for Eddie Sutton, he was just revered in my household. It just was. And I don't know what he was like to work for my dad. We didn't really talk about that, but it was just one of those, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. So STFU and listen and play ball. And, you know, it's one of the things that I don't know if college coaches have this like they used to have this. You know, coaches, I believed then, and these that old guard, they had gigantic personalities. Bob Knight. Many of you remember Bob Knight as the TV analyst, but that was when he was kind of a grumpier old man. If you knew Bob Knight in his prime, my dad went to college and played. My dad was actually a walk-on when he was a star, actually sixth man on their back-to-back Final Four teams at Ohio State. He just had a gigantic personality. Could it be abrasive? Sure. Could it be hilarious? Absolutely. A gigantic personality. Tex Winter, who of course led Kansas State to two Final Fours, was the architect of the triangle offense. A hilarious and engaging and warm personality. Lute Olson, of course, passed away. Big personality. Not necessarily take over the room voice like Jim Valvano. That older guard, it wasn't just about ball. A lot of them didn't draw plays on the whiteboard, but they knew how to motivate people to want to invest in the program for donors, to recruit players, and they'd still recruit you when you're on their team. Like, that's the reason you need to be a great recruiter in college basketball is not just because you need to sign players. You need to be a great recruiter because you need to recruit fans to believe in what you're doing. You need to be a great recruiter because you need to recruit players you need to recruit players who are on your team to play the way you want to play in the role in which you've designed for them or to wait their turn. All of that is recruiting, just different types of recruiting. Eddie Sutton was as good as any at it. So in this pod, there's some stories in there. It's a little bit jumbled, but there's some real good gems. I hope you enjoy it. Without further ado, Brian Montanati, who of course is from Muskegon, Michigan. Adrian Peterson is from North Little Rock, Arkansas, an incredible player, third all-time leading scorer in the history of Oklahoma State basketball. And Desmond Mason, who, of course, was an All-American my senior year, played a decade in the NBA, slam dunk champion, and he has his own documentary. We'll do a pod with him here in the coming weeks because he's an amazing, amazing guy and a very talented artist. All right, without further ado, here's the Ed of Sutton discussion.
All right, so let's welcome in. He's the head coach of Owosso High School. He played professionally for, I think, 10 years, mostly in Italy on a fake passport. We can get into that story if you want. But more importantly, like, he's one of the, not only one of my favorite teammates, but one of kind of the, like, all-time perfect, like, Eddie Sutton stories. He's Brian Montanati. He joins us in the All Ball podcast. I mentioned that you're the perfect Eddie Sutton story because, and again, you'll have to help me in my recollection. Weren't you going to go to Cal State Fullerton and then you went to junior college instead and flipped and went to Oklahoma State? Like, how, what was the, take me through what actually really happened.
So I signed, committed to go to Cal State Fullerton. And then,
this is out of high school?
Out of high school. So I got out there a month before school started. And, when they wine you and dine you, you know, when you're going out there for your visit, they take you to Disneyland and all that other stuff and everything is cool. But, I got out there and one of the assistant coaches.
Who's the coach of Fullerton?
Bob Hawkins. And so my AAU coach actually ended up getting an assistant coaching job out there. That's how I got out there. And I got out there and realized it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I obviously got a little homesick. So I went back home for a little bit and then actually went back to Fullerton and went to JUCO out there for a year. And then that's how I ended up at Oklahoma State.
So Brian, help me out with this. Okay. So you go out there, California is not good at the time, but you think you're going to LA. You get there, and how long are you there before you're homesick?
Man, like, I was probably a little homesick that first month. And then, I talked to my family back home and decided that, you know, I was going to come back home and try something else. It was just different, you know, it was, you know, and you probably know this, when we go to college, we want to experience, you know, to play college basketball. You want to play, everyone wants to play in a big time atmosphere, in a big time arena and have a chance to play in a tournament. And unfortunately, Cal State Fullerton, it wasn't a good fit, a good vibe for myself at the time. So I end up actually leaving before that first week of school started and went back home. But because I was enrolled in school, it was kind of one of those Jeopardy deals where I had enrolled in school. And if I would have transferred to another four-year university, I would have had to sit out, basically lose 2 years of eligibility versus going the JUCO route for a year. And then I'd have 3 years of eligibility. So it's not, the transfer rules weren't as favorable for student athletes back in the day. 20 years ago, 25 years ago, as they are right now. So I was penalized by making a mistake. I was penalized by me making a mistake signing at a school that I shouldn't have probably signed at.
Okay. So you're at Fullerton, you're playing for, how'd you decide to play for Fullerton though? Like, you're like, I was just homesick and now you go back to play for Fullerton.
God, I knew Dieter.
For people who don't understand, like, Fullerton College, which is
right down the road,
I mean, 2 miles down the road from Cal State Fullerton, to junior college, Dieter Horton was the coach at the time. Okay, so how'd you know?
When I got home, I had opportunities to go play like at Western Michigan and, you know, like MAC schools and things like that. And, I was really, really, really considering it. But the biggest thing for me was losing the eligibility. You know, I qualified out of high school. I worked extremely hard to achieve that goal. And me losing the year of eligibility, basically 2 years of eligibility was going to be tough. So the route for me was going to JUCO. And I talked to Dieter a lot about it, and he assured me that, you know, this is what we were going to do, these are the things that we were going to do, and for me to come out and give it another try. And I did, and I absolutely loved it. You know, I mean, it was a great experience going back out there and playing for him. And you know, and getting experience that kind of JUCO basketball.
Okay, so when did Oklahoma State come into the fold for you?
About the same time they were recruiting you. I think they came out to recruit you, and Sean and I think it was Paul Graham came by the gym and, you know, started recruiting me, basically. They came in and watched us work out, and I think they had told me that they were down there watching you. I think you were at Orange Coast, but you weren't playing. But
they told me Golden West.
Golden West.
I was at Golden West.
Golden West. So they, you know, they told me they liked me, and you know, and Sean would, you know, and Paul Graham were gonna, you know, start recruiting me heavier and harder. So that's basically how it started. It started in that fall of my first year of school. What's up?
So Adrian Peterson hopping on the All Ball podcast. We'll get to him in a second. Okay, so when did you first meet Coach Sutton?
It would have been that fall of my freshman year at JUCO. Sean came out with Coach, and he didn't say too much. He just sat over there, you know, kind of like he does, and watched the workout. And, you know, I talked to him for a little bit after the workout, and, you know, he told me that, you know, they would love for me to be a Cowboy, and they're trying to get me to come out and visit and all that stuff. And, you know, he was just one of those guys where, when you talk to him, you felt pretty good. You know, he was very genuine. I felt like he over the top nice, I would say. It's a different story when you get to play for him. But, you know, just going through the initial phases of the recruiting phase with him, you know, it was, you know, you felt good. You felt comfortable. You know, he told you what your roles were going to be. You know, but he also made you feel really good about the situation. He absolutely loved Oklahoma State.
So he told you you wouldn't play when you first got there?
No, not at all. That's not what they say to you at all, man. I mean, heck, I got kids now that are getting recruited, and they're going to.
He tells you what your role is going to be. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, but you know how that is, dog. You know how that is. I mean, hell. He told you that you're going to shoot and average 20 probably too, and you didn't get
no, he didn't. No, he didn't. No. He didn't. He didn't do any of that stuff. He just told me it'd be my team. So
you know.
But no, I'm messing with you. So when you first played for Coach, right? Like, what was it? So again, my initial, like, I knew Coach, but I never, I don't know, didn't necessarily have a concept of what it'd be like to play for him. So
yeah,
I did. I remember, like, my first. There's a couple of first Eddie Sutton stories, right? So my first day, I roll up into campus, and so I'm a sophomore, but I played at Notre Dame. Started at Notre Dame. I sat at junior college. I'm 21 years old now. I'm old like you, and I drove to Lake Havasu, and hung out with a buddy and his family for a day, like. Water ski, jet ski, whatever. And then I drove straight to Oklahoma. And I remember stopping in Oklahoma City. I didn't know how to get to Stillwater because I'd only been there at night because on my visit, my flight got delayed. Right. And anyway, I stopped. I called Mary Lee on the 1-800 number to find out how to get to Stillwater from Oklahoma City. I was on 44.
You didn't have a map?
No.
Well, that's your fault then, man. I mean, dang, Doug, you got to have a map, son.
Well, it was like one of those, like, hey, you take it was really simple. You take I-40 to I-35, and then you get off on the Stillwater side.
Well, how hard is it to get to Stillwater? Stillwater is the easiest place in America to get to, man. You got to get your map.
But I cut through on 44, and so I didn't miss. I was, like, a little bit lost. And I also thought, again, because I hadn't been to Oklahoma, because I hadn't been to Oklahoma, I thought that, you know, that Northwest Expressway right there, there's the tower and the mall and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that was Oklahoma City. I was like, I remember calling my mom going like, hey, yeah, I'm in Oklahoma City. She's like, what's it like? I was like, there's one building. Because I thought that was Oklahoma City. Anyway, I roll up into town and I pop up into his office. And I remember the office. I remember the office had it was like the old office in the old Gallagher was like dimly lit, right? And he was
dark shutters.
Yeah, it was like super dark.
It was like walking doing? In the Godfather's office.
Anyway, so I roll in and I was like, what should I do? Because there was nothing to do. Like it was like a Thursday and school didn't start till Monday. And so he goes into his desk and he asks me if I like Westerns and he hands me three VHS of Western movies. He's like, oh, I just watched these the other day. These are good. You like Westerns? I was like, yeah, coach, I like Westerns. So he gave me three Westerns and then he told me to go watch the high school football game on Friday night. Like that was my first, when I first rolled into town. Let's welcome in Adrian Peterson, who we can go into his story. When did you first meet Coach Sutton?
First time I met Coach was back, I probably was 15 or 16. He would come to our AAU practices in Little Rock. And he just introduced himself to the team. So he would come in each summer and sit in the stands and watch us. So I met him back, you know, when I was maybe a sophomore, freshman to sophomore maybe in high school.
And what'd you think?
I mean, I was everybody was intimidated by that guy because he coached, you know, coached the Razorbacks. So we were all familiar with him and his teams and stuff and being Razorback fans, but it was just a little intimidating. He had a legendary coach, you know, watching you play, and, you know, we were still learning how to play the game. So it was a little intimidating, but and you didn't hear the stories about him. But after you got a chance to know him, he was okay.
What made you choose Oklahoma State?
Man, I tried not to go to Oklahoma State, actually. I think I committed to Tennessee, and I called Coach Sutton during practice time. I left him a voicemail, told him I wasn't coming. And then the next day, Sean was at my high school. So I really picked it just because it was close to home. My parents were big fans of Coach Sutton's, and it kind of fit my game. Just the system that he ran and just, you know, being familiar with some of the guards he's had in the past. I just thought it'd be a good fit for me. So ultimately, I chose to go there.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Wait, so Tennessee was who? Was that Kevin Kevin O'Neill?
Yeah, that was Kevin O'Neill. It was a terrible situation. I just got caught up in a recruiting visit. That's about it.
Yeah, no. They were recruiting me. I guess it was a couple years later, right? And right. But they used to it was Lawrence Frank. He'd like carpet bomb you with stuff every day. Every day you would go out, there'd be letters and stuff from them. It was crazy.
Yeah. It was a crazy recruiting. They were hard and heavy, but that was my first time really, my first recruiting trip, and I got caught up in just all that hoopla, and it was a bad situation. It wasn't a good fit for me, but so I'm glad I didn't make that choice for sure.
So you met a beautiful girl, is what you're telling us?
No, I did not. It was actually a terrible experience. So all the way around.
So why did you commit there?
Why did you commit to
it? Was a bad fit. You're like, because that was a bad fit. I didn't need a girl. It was a bad situation, but I committed there.
Well, it was opportunity for playing time right away.
Yes.
The team wasn't that strong, and they had a bunch of guys.
They were terrible.
Yeah, and
when he first got the job, right?
Yeah, and they were.
I remember because they were recruiting me, and they were like, Lawrence Frank was like, "Watch us. We play Kentucky tonight. We're gonna be awesome, right?" And they had like 14 points, and we're gonna play fast. They had like 14 points, or holding the ball at that. And I was like, "No, thank you."
Yeah, no. That was the main deal. Just playing time, man. And plus, the older guys weren't that good, and they wanted to get rid of a lot of those guys. So I was like, "Man, I could start as a freshman." Good situation, and yeah, so no.
So you show up in Stillwater,
uh-huh.
And this is 1995. Okay, so yep. You're right off the Final Four. They right. went to the Final Four, right? Who's on your squad?
If I can remember, who Keontae was still there. Jason Scare. Maurice Robinson, Jerome Lambert, Andre Owens, man, who else? Kevin Miles was there. That's about all I can remember. Chad Alexander. Not a lot.
So you get there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What's your first memory of Eddie Sutton?
First memory of Coach Sutton. he came in. I was like, man, this dude's pretty rough because he lost a lot of talent that Final Four year and then just kind of stuck with us and Keontae. So it was pretty rough. I didn't enjoy my first couple months, man. It was a whole lot of, you know, he just wasn't happy with his team. I don't know what happened. I was the only recruit that actually came in, I think. So it was just it was a bad couple months because he was definitely wasn't happy with our work ethic or anything.
Wasn't Jay Scare in your recruiting class?
Nope. The only person was in my recruiting class. There was one other guy. I forgot his name. He decided to try to go pro. He went to the league. I was the only person in my whole class for 4 years.
Funny you point out how it was rough because my first memory of, like, pickup ball and coach, you guys remember? So he went and worked the Jordan camp, right?
Yep.
So he was gone for, like, Labor Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And he comes back and we're playing pickup ball. And remember, they weren't supposed to watch. So he would come in and he'd go up the stairs and he'd walk around the entire arena, right? Watching, even though he wasn't supposed to watch, and then get to the office. But he'd take the longest possible route, like, right? Like he parked in that little coach's parking lot right behind the door. Mm-hmm. And his office was right up there. If you walk up, you walk to right to right. But instead, he walked to left, do a complete loop on the upper level of the old Gallagher. And then walk into his office. I remember him doing a loop when he first got back from the Jordan camp. And then he literally stopped the pickup games and tell us how terrible we were and about how Michael Jordan told him we need to all make, I don't know, like 150 shots a day or something like that. No more pickup games until further notice. Everybody has to make like 150 shots, right? And he was so mad that he cut the walk-ons. Because he watched the pickup game and the walk-ons were playing and they were terrible. And so he cut the walk-ons. Yep. So if you remember back our first year, I don't think we had any walk-ons that year because he cut them all. He might have saved one, right? And then like the next year, we added in Rodney Suter and some of those other dudes. We had no and Jared Weiberg. But that was my junior year, your senior year. But that first year he cut, that was when I was like, damn, this dude does not play around at all. He cut the walk-ons, watched like 5 minutes of pickup.
Yeah, what about the rules he put in place with us playing pickup? You had to pass the ball 5 times. Actually one. That's one of the rules I actually use with our varsity team when they're playing pickup because the game would get all helter-skelter and get crazy. And this was probably a year ago. I told them, you got to make 5 passes before you can take a shot. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. And they're like, my assistant coaches, everybody, they're like, where'd you get that from? I'm like, that's an old Eddie Sutton trick, man. That means everybody's involved. Everybody's running the floor. Everybody's touching the ball. But no one's just coming down playing, what do you call it, hero ball, one-on-one, and the same person's taking all the shots. So that was another rule that he put in. That was a little eye-opening at the time when you're first trying to get to know him and learn how to play for him.
I believe my 1 year, he wouldn't allow us to play full court pickup. We had to play half court. I don't think y'all were there.
No, it was with us.
That was after the Jordan thing.
Yeah. Oh,
it was first shooting, and then it was half court. We're like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
and then everybody had to be across half court. If you're playing full court, everybody had to be across half court.
Yep.
And if you took a shot, and you got a dude trailing. Or not running the floor, basket didn't count. Remember all that?
Yeah.
And it used to be a manager used to be the one that would have to come down and say, hey, coach wants you guys to pass the ball 5 times before you take a shot. And, really, yeah. And we're like, coach isn't even around.
That was not fun pickup ball. Not at all.
Let me hit on this real quick. I can remember our first practice. It was a two-a-day practice. And Pete, I don't know if Pete remembers this, but it was over fall break, and like you get coach, you know, in the fall before practice, and you know how he is and everything else. He can be really tough and hard at you and everything else. But then you get into practice, and you go through that first practice, and you leave Gallagher, and you're going home to take a nap, and you're like, holy cow, what did I just sign up for? What did I get myself into? Then you come back the second practice, And I can remember leaving Gallagher after that second practice thing, and there's no way I can play for this man. This is insane. This is crazy, man. It's hard. It's tough. You know, very demanding. I'm like, I mean, you go through a practice and you don't one thing right, you hear everything about it.
Hold on. I remember the first, like, week, he didn't do shit. He just sat there and took notes. And then Micah would sit next to him and talk his ear off, right? And sometimes he'd
fall asleep.
Say something, but he'd fall asleep. Like, I remember, like, okay, this is a
true story. I remember what you said. Practice. I remember we're in the middle of practice, and Doug's like, shit. Look at Coach over there sleeping. He's like, we're not gonna be worth a damn. He's like, we must not be worth a damn if Coach can fall asleep at practice.
He was dead.
But I was getting back to the deal with Pete. With Pete after that first two a day, I remember Pete coming. You know, we all lived in Bennett. I remember Pete coming up to my room. I don't know if Pete remembers this or not, but I tell this story all the time, man. When people ask me about playing for Coach. I'm like, Pete comes in the room, sits down, he buys a little six pack, you know, and he comes in the room, we sit in the room, you know, and we're just having a couple beers after practice. And he's like, basically, this is how practice is. This is the way it's going to be, you know, and get used to it because it's not going to get any easier. You got one.
That was my visit. The ball and Pete can attest to this. So my visit. All right. So this is I'm like the whole, everybody thinks like you go to somewhere because of recruiting visit. It's so stupid. And so I was supposed to come out on like Tuesday, and you guys played A&M on a Wednesday, and you guys weren't any good, and A&M was worse. Right? And so, and then I was going to Oregon. Oregon played Arizona on Thursday, and so I was supposed to leave like first thing Tuesday morning, spend all day there, watch the game Wednesday night, go out with you guys after the game, leave Thursday morning, go to Oregon. So I go down to Orange County Airport. And my flight's delayed. It's like 7 to 8 to 9. Okay, you don't take off till like 3 in the afternoon. I'm like, what? So I land in Oklahoma City at like 10, 11 at night. Sean picks me up. And, you know, we talked like the whole way back. So I didn't even know where it was so dark. Like, I didn't know. I wasn't paying attention. Anyway, get up the next morning. It's not a particularly nice day. Coach drives me around campus. Right? I'll never forget this shit ever. And he was like, literally showing me everything. He's like, that's Theta Pond. When I was in school, everybody's goal was to have sex at Theta Pond. I was like, what? Like, yeah, it was like an achievement. You could have sex at Theta Pond. I was like, how? Like, you know, the benches, or you're playing a blanket, or you go at night or whatever. It's like, and kids don't do it now. He's like, and I was like, I wanted to say, like, oh, is that like you and Patsy? Was that like a thing? But I knew better than that, right? I knew him better than that. But anyway, they played A&M. And I remember I was watching like shoot around, and then I was watching warm-ups, and Mace is doing all these crazy dunks. And I was like, man, why aren't they better? Like, you guys are like, Pete was nice and Mace is nice. And he just didn't, you know, Joe was all right, but you know, like they don't really have point guard. Anyway, I think you guys won the game. We go back to Pete's apartment at Bennett. I was like, what are we going to do? Pete goes and he's got like a six pack or maybe a case. Yeah, this is what we're going to do. And that's what we did. We sat around and told stories and drink beer.
They're like, well, Tuesday night.
Go to State Line. Huh?
It was Tuesday night. You know, we couldn't do too much.
I think it was a Wednesday.
Was it?
Yeah. It was before we got to like karaoke Wednesday nights at Willie's. In the spring. So, okay. But so I remember him not doing shit. Right? And then all of a sudden, like, I also remember, B, you can attest to this, you struggle a little bit to pick up things. Right? So he sent you upstairs. Brian, you don't come down until you know all the plays.
That was MJ, Doug. That was Michael Johnson.
No, it was you.
Yeah.
It was Michael Johnson,
man.
Coach
never called him the smartest, dumbest kid he's ever coached in his life.
That was his last practice. I was his roommate. Last practice. He goes, you're the dumbest, smart kid I've ever had. Okay? So, dude, he sent you up there with Judge.
With PG. That didn't know shit.
Yes, that's the problem. Yeah. So, Paul Graham
was gone. I spelled defense wrong in a scout report.
So he sends you up there to learn all of the plays. And then you come down the next day and you're worse. Because now it's not that you don't know him. You know everything that PG told you. He just told you the wrong shit, right?
Judging no shit. He didn't know
the offense. Like, literally. Yeah. And then we're like, Judge. We'd be like, shit, I know, I was good. Shit, what's that called? Yeah. I like that. What's that called? Hey, so Pete, what was coach like? So your first 2 years.
Right.
You guys are not very good.
No.
What was he like? What was he like to you, though? Because you were still, like, you were his guy. Or at least that's how it was to us. Like, we thought your last name was Sutton.
Man, you were his guy. My freshman
year. Coach didn't say shit to Pete.
Nah, my freshman year was, you know, no expectations. They were coming out Final Four, so I kind of got a pass that year. Plus, we sucked. So, I scored a few points. He didn't really say shit to me. He'd always tell me, hey, we need some help next year because we had Joe and Mason, all those guys coming. So, freshman year was really – he just talked how bad the other guys were. He didn't really mess with me a lot. My sophomore year was my worst year ever. That was the worst year because he rolled me. He called my parents. He threatened to send me back home multiple times. He told me I wasn't very good.
So this is a podcast. We're trying to explain to people what it was really like. Right. Okay, so give me the what it was really like in terms of him threatening to send you home.
Well, it sucked.
Do it.
What's up, fellas?
What's up, man?
What's up, Mace? All right, so hold on. So what was it? Give me the story behind the he said threatened to send you home. Because he threatened to send, I think, all of us home.
Yeah.
He told me multiple times. He called all of our parents.
Correct. He didn't even call your girlfriend.
He did not call my girlfriend. But he did make my girlfriend wait an extra hour and a half. I'll tell that story in a second. So go ahead with the first time he threatened to send you home.
It was after practice. I don't know. I wasn't doing very good. I don't know. But he called me to the office. He had my dad on speakerphone. And he just said, hey, you need to talk to your son. He made up all this shit, whatever. But he he left the room. And so my dad was pissed. He said, you embarrassed me, all kind of stuff. So he comes back in and he said, well, he can either correct this or I'm going to send him on a bus back to Little Rock. And my dad was like, dude, what the hell did you do? You don't even get in trouble. Now you pissed off, you know, so... He was a big fan of coaches. So after that, my mom talked to me and they were like, you got to fix something. I said, I didn't do anything. He's just mad because we're not very good. He's pissed at everybody. And he did it 2 weeks later. He said, hey, I'm going to send you home, and he kicked me out of practice or something. But
Didn't he drug test you?
Huh?
Didn't he drug test you? You played bad one game.
I got drug tests every time. I didn't smoke. I got drug tests every time drug tests popped up. Every time. But I guess they knew who to test, I guess. I don't know, man. But, yeah. But he did drug test because of my attitude one time, so maybe that was it. I don't know.
That's what you told me. You're like, man. Yeah. He's like, don't let your attitude slip. He'll drug test you in a second.
Yeah. Brian Farr did that shit, though. Brian Farr said something's wrong with me, so he drug tested me one day randomly. So,
Brian Farr, did he really drug test us after we lost to Duke, or was that just because he knew we were out messing around?
I think he said it was the NCAA. I think that was the deal. Was
we skipped? We skipped out on it. We skipped out.
I went to King. I went to Kingfisher.
Yes. Do you know that story?
Back in the day,
No.
Okay, so this is the story. We got back from playing Duke. Right, we lost to Duke, and we were heroes because we should have beat Duke.
Right.
that was it. That was how it worked. So, if you remember, that was like Sunday. Monday, so Sunday night, B and I go out. That was when you met your ex-wife. That's when you met Amanda.
Yes,
we hung out at Kyle Waters' house, maybe, and somebody else's house, and we were doing some shit. And so then the next day, we go to Joe's for green eggs and ham because it's St. Patrick's Day, and we drink and mess around all day. We're there at like 10 a.m., right? Everybody's there. We're like heroes. And so the next morning, we get up and both of us have a message from Brian Farr. We got a drug test. And we're like, we're going to flunk this. We're going to flunk this drug test. What do we do? So if you remember, remember the apartments where Mace, you lived your senior year and where Clint Combs lived, right?
Yeah.
What are those apartments called? I forget. I don't remember the name. Stillwater High School. The Terrace. Okay, right by the Terrace, there's like a health food something store, and they had that Golden Seal tea. And people's like, oh, if you drink the Golden Seal tea, it'll clean you out. You'll be right. So I go make all this tea, and B and I are drinking this tea. We're like, man, this ain't
good. I was in Kingfisher. I went to Kingfisher. I was out.
Brian leaves. And I gotta like just I gotta not answer the phone for like 2 days because I'm going home to California. I don't know if it's like spring break or a long weekend or something like that. We literally just deuced out and never took the drug test. That's really what happened. And we to this day, I don't know whether Brian Farr saw us out messing around or just we legit had a drug test that we didn't show up. That's my drug test.
Say it again.
So we started by everybody telling their first story of when they first met Coach Sutton. You first met Coach Sutton where and when?
I first met Coach Sutton when he came to watch me practice in Waxahachie. And at the time, my coaches, they were still giving, like, licks. My high school coaches gave licks. If you miss a layup, you turn the ball over, you got a lick. They called them hickeys. And so they would mark them. And at the end of every practice, like, that was the first order of business. And so I remember Coach Sutton coming to watch me practice and talking to my coach, who was a kind of small town West Texas coach that just came into a 4A school, Randy Carlisle. And Coach Sutton kept asking him what he's marking down on these boards, why he keeps stopping plays. And he told him, well, we're doing these things they call hickeys. And he said, well, what's a hickey? And he said, well, I'll show you after practice. So after practice, the first thing that they did is lined everybody up on the wall and everybody got licks for all turnovers and missed layups. Anything else was fine. Turn over to Miss Leah.
Can you imagine, as a high school coach right now, Ryan Medusa, would you be able, by the time you got home, would you be fired?
No.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Nowadays, guys would be fired like crazy. But we had them at halftime of games. It was the first order of business when we came into the locker room at halftime. You know, guys had to take care of their hickeys. So don't miss layups. Don't turn the ball over. That was my first time with coaching. Coach was blown away that my coach was coaching that way, though. He was absolutely blown away.
So that's where he got the name hickeys, because remember he used to call when we make turnovers, he called hickeys.
When it was called hickeys. We wrote them down on the board and it was called a hickey.
Damn, dude, that's real. Okay, damn. So did you like him? That shit is crazy. Okay. Did you like him?
Coach Sutton?
Yes.
Yeah. I knew nothing about him. The first time I even knew anything about Oklahoma State University, when they were recruiting me, but I watched the Final Four and I just kept remembering this guy, Big Country. So it was just, and Randy. So it was fun to watch him. Obviously, they went to Seattle and then you had Scott Toothless in Seattle. So I don't know. I just, as a small town Texas kid, I started watching that team and just kind of fell in love with the team. So I started doing a little bit more research on who Coach Sutton was. And he was just kind of a hard-nosed coach like my coach, minus the paddles. But I loved him when I first met him. And even through the recruiting process, he shot me straight. He never promised me anything. Obviously, I came in behind, you know, Keontae and Pete and those guys, Marlon. I was part of that group. But Coach just – he was no promising anything. He's like, I had to work for whatever I got. So I was down with that. I loved him as a coach. Even when I first met him, I had no issues with Coach Sutton. He just seemed like a country guy.
All right. So you show up in school. Pete's a sophomore. They weren't very good, right? You got you, Joe, Estelle. Who else is in that?
Weber.
Joe. Oh, Weber, Robish, yeah. Scott Robish.
Yeah.
We had Brett, Chad, right? And Tommy. Yeah.
Okay, so what was your, because my first memory was showing up, walking up to his office. It was like dimly lit. and he gave me some Westerns to watch. We were talking about pickup ball when he made us play half court or pass five times.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
What do you remember about first, like your first practices, your first times you're playing for the student?
I would say my first time, coach made it very clear that I had done nothing. Even in the bash, I broke that backboard during the Eddie Sutch bash. And then we had our practice, I think it was the next day. And, you know, I was just playing hard. And me and Keontae just kind of got a little physical, but it was just, you know, playing hard. And coach stopped practice and immediately told me that I was nothing. Breaking a backboard means nothing. Keontae's been there and done it. And he said, Paul, I want you to take care of him. And Paul Graham became, he tried to make me his whipping boy. But coach made sure every chance he got to let me know that Keontae was better and that I was the nobody. And same thing with Jason Scare. He would put me on Jason and Jason would try to get physical. But coach would always stop. He wouldn't let me get physical back. So he was very adamant about me knowing that you know, I was going to be behind those guys. And that was just the way it was going to be.
Pete, the Jason Scare snowball story. Go. Hey, you guys played OU the day before?
Yeah, the day before. And I think I was walking, me and Jason were walking somewhere, because I never really walked with the guy, but, man, we just started getting hit with snowballs, man. They were throwing snowballs at us, telling me he sucked. And I was like, God, dude, what's going on, man? You know, so that was my last time walking with Jason. I didn't realize everybody, you know, didn't really like the guy, I guess, but it was bad for about 5 minutes. I got out of there, man.
I don't know if Pete remembers this story, especially it changed to Jason. Coach put me on him one day in practice, and the ball was going out of bounds. And so they had the scores tables up. So we're chasing the ball out of bounds, and I'm hustling. And I go to reach for the ball and throw it back in, and he pushes me over the scores table. I grab his jersey, and I pull him with me. I mean, we kind of get tangled up, so I pull him over with me, and we immediately get into it. And Coach Sutton stops it. And I think it wasn't long after that. It may have been a few days because he lived with Hardale Moore, I think, at the time, that wrestler. And it wasn't long after that. In the middle of the night, Jason told nobody anything. He got stuff, left all his stuff in his locker and left town.
Yeah, I remember that. He lived with Hardale?
He lived with Hardale.
Oh.
Yeah, he lived with Hardale. The year he left, he lived with Hardale. Hardale was the one that told me he left town. Well, he told everybody he left town. But Jason's dad called Coach Sutton and said that he wouldn't be coming back to school at Oklahoma State. I think he went transferred to Rice, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, right. Yeah. He was a strange cat, man. I thought
you told me, and maybe I got my stories confused, that the night he left, you had told him to meet you at the gym, like you guys just shoot at the gym late at night, and like he no-showed, and you're like, all right. And then you like literally had left town.
I don't remember because I heard about it the next morning, so I didn't have any plans to meet Jason anywhere at night. I promise you that. I don't know. Maybe we got the story twisted, but no, I don't. I heard about it like everybody else, man.
Okay, so, Mace, I was asking Pete about his second year, your first year. What was that like when you guys were bad?
Man, it was. For me, it was a huge transition, man. These guys were bigger. I mean, I played center half the time when I was in high school. You know, I was able to shoot a little bit out on the perimeter, but I mean, I played most of center. I was the second tallest guy on my team. And so when I got in, I mean, he got all these big guys. I mean, even my class coming in, Estelle was unbelievably talented. Just athletic as heck. Joe could really shoot the ball. Weber and Robish, two big guys. I mean, I hadn't even played against guys that big, you know, when I was in high school. And then you had Pete. And the one thing I always tell people about Pete is, you know, he put the ball on the floor one or two times and pull up. I mean, like, his release was much higher than most people can jump from a defensive recovery standpoint. He jumps so high off the ground, and he can really shoot the ball, especially from the mid-range. Then I'm chasing Keontae at about the elbow. Coach Dave gave it to him at the elbow, and he just started going to work at the elbow. It was just a hard transition, you know, for me. And I really stuck with a lot of the guys I came in from a class standpoint, because none of us knew each other that well, but, you know, I knew them through the recruiting process. But it was tough, man. It was, you know, I heard you guys talking about the practices. You know, coach was, it wasn't easy, but for me, from a transitional standpoint, it wasn't easy. It was a pretty hard transition.
When did it change for you? So for me, it was a little different, only in that because I had played, my dad had coached with him. Like, I felt like my first half of my first year, it was cool. Like, nobody said shit to me. Then all of a sudden, like, semester, when they know you're staying, then they flip and you can't do anything right. Like, literally, you can't do anything right. Like, man, you tuck your shirt in. Your locker's a mess. We went into your apartment. It's a mess. Right? Your grades suck. You get back on defense. Look at your attitude right here. You're like, what? Like, 5 minutes ago, you guys didn't say shit. Now all of a sudden, you're on me. Mace, when did it change? What did it? Because when I started playing with you, I remember he never went, at least in public, full frontal on you. How did he get on to you? When did it change for you?
Man, for me, he always did it through my dad. You know, he always, he used my dad because he knew that, you know, if he called my dad, my dad was the guy that would get in the car and drive 4 hours and be in Stillwater. He did it many times. And then what he thought is, because my dad and Paul Graham had a fairly good relationship, you know, and you guys, I'm sure you remember me and Paul Graham had, you know, many battles in practice, you know, where I really got in his face. I liked him, but I didn't like him. But he used Paul Graham also as, you know, another asset for him to really, really jump on me. And he would call me in the office and have, you know, very serious conversations with me. But he knew if he called my dad, from the scores table, made me talk to him in front of the guys. He had to come take me far away.
Desmond, you come over here and tell your dad. You tell your dad what you said to me. You're like, oh, shit. And then you'd be like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I love you too. Click. Like, and all of a sudden, Desmond's fucking blocking shots and doing crazy shit, right?
Yeah, he did that. He used him. He threatened, just like he did all of us, threatened to run me back to Waxahachie. He used that against us all, but that was, I mean, my sophomore year is when it really switched for me.
Brian, your sophomore year, you didn't play very much, right? Because Mace was playing the four, you had Robo at the five, and you had Pete at the three, right? They're just not a lot of minutes when you got those three, right? And then we had just a bunch of other dudes kind of fighting for backup minutes. But you basically won us the OU game at the free throw line, and you got carried off the court. What was coach like to you? You remember, like, because you were like the opposite. Like, Pete and I, we played right away for him, right? So he kind of started by letting us do our thing and then reeled us back in. For you, it was kind of the opposite, where he started hard on you and then eventually kind of looked through and earned his respect. Was it that moment? Like, when did it kind of change for you?
I wouldn't say, honestly, it changed for me until my junior year. I think the OU game, you probably thought it was just kind of like a fluke deal, honestly. But I was just happy the fact that, you know, to take advantage of the opportunities that I did get my first year playing. There was a lot of dudes I felt like you had to beat out, you had to pass. And then also they would bring guys in that played the same position as you when they were recruiting, you know, during the year while you were playing. So I think things changed for me my junior year. You know, I mean, I remember having different conversations with coach in the fall, you know, about, you know, playing and things like that. And then, you know, I could just see our relationship evolving. I think I settled in a lot more, you know, was playing with a lot of confidence. But a lot of it got to, you know, he's not an easy man to play for. I mean, some guys play right away, but very few guys come in and play their first year. You know, a lot of times it takes you a year to get used to, you know, what he demands out of you. You know, so for me, it was one of those things where, and I know we've all seen a lot of guys come and go in the program that we played with. And it was, you know, dudes that they couldn't get it right, man. They couldn't figure out how to play for him.
What was the white dude's name? He was a big guy. He might have been in Mace's class, might have been in your class. who wouldn't come out of his room.
Wouldn't come out of his. Oh, that was Ben Baum.
Ben Baum.
Yeah.
Was that your year or Mace's year? Whose recruiting class was it?
That it wasn't my recruiting class. He came in with Jason, with Jay Scare, I think. Yeah. He was older. He's a year older than me. Yeah.
And then he wouldn't come out of his room?
Dude, I don't even remember that guy. That's the last, first time I heard that name in 20. Man, I don't know what. He went near my.
The story was he went through like depression. Like it was like one of those, everybody's been through it. Like Brian was talking about it. It was 2 days or 3 days to start the season or Christmas break, right? Where there's nobody around and there's no 20 hour rule and they're fucking grinding you. And he couldn't do it. And he like locked himself in the room and wouldn't come out. I ain't coming out.
That's
great. I think the stories of the guys who left are better than the guys who stayed. Like Roy Canley. You guys, rest in peace to Big Roy Canley. Remember when that dude showed up?
Big Roy. Yeah. Yeah.
Big Roy.
That was the biggest human being I've ever seen in my entire life.
Big dude.
And you guys are messing with him, calling him C-Cup.
Yeah.
Big Roy.
Hey, I remember taking
Roy to. I took Roy to Shortcakes on his visit, man. Remember how we'd get money to take? We'd get per diem to take dudes out, and you'd always try to. You'd always try to hang on to some. Yeah,
you like try to hang on to some. I remember taking Roy
to freaking Shortcakes. Shortcakes, you can spend $10 there and eat all you want to eat, man. I remember dropping him off at the hotel. Having like $3 in my name after his visit. He spent the whole damn per diem up, man. The whole thing.
Do you guys know the story of how they found out he was losing weight?
Yes.
Okay, so here's girlfriend.
Yes. Yeah.
So he, I think coach's rule was he couldn't practice with us unless he was like under 365. Right? And this dude was like four bills when he came in. So he gets to like 365, and he's like working out in the morning, then practicing with us, and then working out, and all of a sudden his weight starts going up. It makes no sense at all, right? And so this is like first semester of maybe our junior year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our junior year, because he was there second semester, maybe our sophomore year. I can't remember. So anyway. Maybe it was the second semester, our junior, second semester, I think our junior year, my junior year, Pete's senior year. So Big Roy's on the team. He hadn't played a minute, or maybe he played a little bit in exhibition games. And they were like, remember we had the swipe cards? And every time you eat a meal, you'd swipe. So coach had gone to all the, what are they called? Get and Gallop or Get and Goes or whatever that Rusty owned or whoever owned. So you guys had to work there in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he told him that you could only sell him a turkey sandwich, right? And then he'd gone to all the dining halls and like, you guys can't sell Roy any bad food. So it made no sense. So he's eating turkey, like, and managers would go and eat with him. So finally they get the key. You know, they had a key to, because he lived in that same room that Mace lived in when me and Mace lived together in Bennett Hall, right, up on the fourth floor.
Yep.
And they go into his room. And there's just like hostess wrappers everywhere. Everywhere. So they're like, it's like a mystery. Like, where the fuck is he getting these hostess? So they had a manager stake out his place. This dude was, he had like old school prison break style. He had bed sheets tied together, a little basket, and his girlfriend would roll up, put the stuff in the basket, and he'd roll it into his room and pound the hostess. I swear to God, that's what happened.
No, that's exactly what happened. They put him on a soup and salad diet. Coach put him on a soup and salad diet, and they would weigh him all the time, and they were getting confused why his weight would either 100% stay the same or he would go up 4 or 5 pounds at a time. And so eventually, coach put somebody on it. They used to stake out the front of his dorm room. So they put somebody on it to find out that his girlfriend was giving him snacks and stuff through the window of his dorm room.
Yeah. That's when the movie Life was popular. Remember that? Coach Austin, our strength coach, we call him Can't Get Right. he'd lose 10 pounds in a week and then come back on the weekend and gain 15. He'd be like, can't get right. He can't get right.
Can't get right. can't get right.
Oh my God.
You know what Roy. It was funny is like Paul Graham, we all had like battles with Paul Graham. You know, Sean was a little bit of a different cat, right? We had Randall Dickey, or Kyle Keller, right? Our strength coach was a deadlift champion, so we're doing all this fucking deadlifts, which didn't help anybody. Right? It was like, what the fuck are we doing here? And yet we were still really good. It made no sense at all. He must have been. And did anybody ever see Coach draw on a whiteboard? Not write on a whiteboard, because he had incredible penmanship. But I don't ever remember him drawing up a play.
No.
No.
Sean was doing most of that. And whoever was doing this report was doing. Sean ran, I mean, as much as I can remember, Sean ran practices, called most of the plays. And whoever did the scouting report, you know, they would, you know, speak on things again. And we can't forget about Coach Williams, you know, being in that
big. Jimmy Williams.
The son of John Williams has slept with four in this Minnesota. Four. And you can sing that in church. You can sing that in church. Big balls to play in the big mouth.
All right, with that group, man, if you had anybody look at that coaching staff outside of Coach Sutton and say we would have been as good as we were, you know, I mean, it was there's nobody. You lost a lot of money trying to make that bet.
Somehow
for some reason, good.
It worked. Pete,
it did work.
Your favorite Coach Sutton story is what?
My favorite Coach Sutton, man, probably would go back to when he called my dad. I mean, I know we just talked about this, but that kind of blew my mind, man. I mean, Coach didn't really mess with me a lot, so I didn't – he never really got on to me a whole lot. But just when he called my dad like two or three times, I was like, dude, this dude is something else. My dad was pissed. He was like, dude, you're embarrassing me. What the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. And he kept doing it. He kept calling it. And I was like
– And the story's never lined up.
Yeah.
The story's never lined up. Like, by the time you talk to your parents, you're like, that's not what happened.
Well, here's what I remember about your pops, though. Your pops would grab me at Applebee's after the game. He'd be like, shit, you keep walking. That was his thing. That's what he does. He goes, he yell at you, shit, you keep walking. He can't win without you. Shit, you keep walking.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I'm just going to do it. Right?
He tell y'all that stuff, but that was different. No. He wasn't trying to have his name messed up, so he wasn't playing with me.
Be your favorite. I'll share mine. Right? He gave me one compliment when I first, like my first week of practice. He called my dad and said I could really play. That was it. That was like, Bob, he could really play. Outside of that, like I don't ever remember getting fucking compliments. And then the second time we played Kansas. My senior year. So our senior year, Pete's gone. We got screwed on that bullshit call where he, I don't know what you were doing with Ryan Robertson trying to get all close to that shit, but whatever. Okay. So we lose it. We play him in our place. And we beat him by 33. But if you, Mace, you and B can attest to this, he called timeout. He's like, slow it down. I got to play him up there next year. But he didn't want to fucking run it up because he had to play without us the next year. Right? So we got to play them in the Big 12 tournament. Now, keep in mind that now that we kicked the shit out of Kansas and they quit, then I think, didn't all our cars get towed that night? Remember they were redoing Gallagher?
Yeah, they were redoing Gallagher, yeah.
And we parked across the street next to that church.
In that apartment. Or
and everybody's cars got towed. So we're like, fuck it. Let's just go down to Joe's, drink beer, watch the replay of the game. We'll worry about our cars tomorrow. That literally happened. So we go play Kansas in the Big 12 tournament. And again, this would have been Pete's last game against Kansas. Pete, do you remember how many points we scored against KU in Kansas City?
Yeah, about 40, maybe.
37, I believe. Mm. 37. It was our fourth in 4 days. And we scored 47. So we go up there and play them in the Big 12 tournament. And I threw two oops to Mace. I made my free throws. Like, I played really. So you had to go to that press conference afterwards, you know. And he put his arm around me. And he's like, that was the best basketball game I've ever seen you play. Those are the only two compliments I ever remember getting from him.
So what do you say to you the next night after? What do you say to you the next night after we lost to Iowa State?
What were you doing?
You said the worst shit I've ever seen.
We're up four.
You can't play a lick.
Mace fouls out. Why the fuck are you fouling out, Mace?
Mace fouls out. And then Joe's like, I'm taking Pfizer.
That's why I fouled out.
Yeah.
And Joe fouled out, man.
And then Joe starts. Joe's like, I'm going to win this game. And then I don't know if you remember, I drove in to shoot a layup.
Yeah.
And I fucking tricked off a layup that I hit my hand on the rim on. What are you doing? I was like, I don't know, coach. I was so high I was going to dunk. Like, you're not dunking it. Lay it off the glass, son.
Coach should have gave your ass 100 hickeys for that damn thing.
I deserved the paddling after that shit. So
that's back when we got back. Remember we got back? That's what we got back to Stillwater. We watched film in that game, and that's when Kyle Keller rewound that play about 100 times and said, we play for the name on the front of the jersey, not on the name on the back of the jersey. He was talking about that layup you shot. You remember that?
I was wide open. I hit my hand on the rim. Sorry, dude. Man, Kyle used to feed you for your shooting times with a phone in his ear.
Phone in his ear, yeah. Freaking, yeah.
Like, yo, man, like, this is my, yeah. I'm trying to get better up here. Like, follow through, follow through. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
He's trying to get a job.
Fall through. So those are my, so B, what's your favorite, like, Eddie Sutton memory?
Probably in my senior year, man. This is just kind of fun. This is the way he was. You know, he would tell you how great you were one day and then bring you back to earth the next day. And I think we were getting – it was towards the end of the season. I was playing pretty well. And he started playing us a little bit different. Like, I started playing the three a little bit at some point, you know, in practice and stuff like that. He was like – He asked me one day in practice, he was like, what was I going to do after I was done playing? I was like, he asked me if I was going to continue to play. And I said, yeah, coach, that's the plan, man. And I'm like, I want to keep playing, you know? So he said, I got to get you ready to go play over in Kuwait. I was like, Kuwait?
Yeah.
And I think we played Nebraska next year. Yeah, we played Nebraska, and I think I had like 24 and 12 or something. So I was feeling pretty good about myself. And, you know, and then he's giving me a lot more freedom and things like that to handle the ball. He says that to me, and I'm like, damn, man, I was just on cloud nine. Didn't feel like I could do anything wrong. Felt like I finally arrived, and you're sending me to Kuwait. You're telling me I can only play in Kuwait next year. Yeah. But it was always little things like that with him, man.
It was the opposite for Mace, okay? All I know is all of us, like, once you got the start, you got the good shoes, right? You don't have to wear the team shoes anymore. But Mace had Air Jordans and shit. Okay. So when did that happen?
Senior year only. Senior year only.
Did he come to you and he's like, what was that? You were privy to conversations that the rest of us were not privy to. How did that come to be that you got Air Jordans?
My senior year, I walked in and I asked him, I said, yeah, obviously I knew we had access to shoes. We can get cooler shoes. And so I asked him, I was like, coach, I really like these Jordan shoes, and I never had a pair of Jordan before. I said, can this be the shoes that I play in? So he got me two pairs. They both were the black and gray. And that was how I got them. I said, I've never had Jordan before, and I want to play in these shoes as a senior. And he was like, okay, I'll get them ordered. That was it.
The thing is, coach, Mace was playing his ass off, though. And this is how coach was. I don't know if you guys remember this, but if coach did – if you the guava juice in Hawaii, remember?
Yes.
When I love guava juice. I love guava juice. You know, first time being out in Hawaii, man, I couldn't drink enough of that stuff, man. So then we get back to Stillwater, and I'm playing like shit. He tells the managers to go find some guava juice so I can get out of my slump. But didn't your Jordans blow out when we were in Seattle playing?
Yeah.
Didn't
yeah,
they? Yeah. And then you were gonna have to play in a different pair of shoes, and automatically somehow. Some way those damn shoes showed up the day before, the day of the game, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, I blew them out in practice.
I remember. Yeah. And it was a big deal because Mace was throwing one of his little hissy fits about it. And coach disappeared. And then next thing you know, the damn shoes are sitting in the locker room before the game. But that's how coach was, man. I mean, he was He took care of you too, man.
I had to go trade mine out to Freeze. That's how I got all mine. I trade them out. Get them. They give me some like these are fucking terrible. These team. Remember the team shoes were always the worst. I was like, man. Everybody had to wear them like the first thing of practice, and like, I need some other shoes, coach. These ain't working. Not working at all. Okay, it did change when you graduated, when you were done playing. So Pete, you finished first. So you get done playing, and you hurt your knee in Chicago.
Right.
What was he like with you when you got done playing?
Coach, he reached out to me, I would say, 3 or 4 times that year, just checking on me, birthday calls and stuff like that, checking on how I was doing, did I need anything, you know, inviting me to come back to rehab in Stillwater. Just, I mean, he did do a very good job, him and Sean, just checking in and making sure I was doing okay. I think I came back to maybe one game for sure in Little Rock, maybe a couple games, but he did a very good job of checking on me. So that made me feel good. But yeah, he did invite me to come back and rehab and work out with you guys. But, you know, I was kind of at home and it took me a little longer to rehab, but it was good. It was a good time.
But as far as helping you in your life and checking in your life and your kids, like, what was that? Because I felt like, look, he called me and this is, I don't know if I told you guys this shit. He's like, I sit with him about the agent thing, right? And he's like, oh, you know what you should do? You should coach women's basketball. And I was like, what? And remember, keep in mind, like,
that's him taking a shot at you.
Yes, how we view women's basketball today is very different from how we view women's basketball then, right?
Correct.
Like, I won't name names, but we did have an assistant coach that said, sex and women's basketball are two things that are best played in the dark, right? I remember that shit, right? I was like, and so now I'm saying the same. That wasn't coach, somebody else, he said that. Anyway, so I said, women's basketball. He's like, oh, yeah, oh. He's like, son, you don't want to get into this rat race. This is not a good living. He's like, you could be the head coach here. He's going to retire in a couple years. I get you on the staff. You be the head coach before you're 30. So I don't know if he was trying to throw me off the scent because he wanted Sean to have the job or he really liked that job for me. But he was trying to convince me that, like, women's basketball was a great little honey hole to make money for the next, like, 40 years, that it was easy pickings. And I was like, it turned me off so much. I was like, it literally, like, I couldn't talk to him for, like, 6 months after that. I was like, okay, coach, I'll let you know if I'm interested. What about you,
Pete,
with advice for you?
Coach was awesome, man. I mean, he was a lot different, obviously, when you stopped playing with him or stopped playing for him. The biggest thing for me was, you know, I was around him all the time because when I retired from playing, you know, he lived here in Tulsa. So I got to spend a lot of time with him, you know, either watching Scott play at ORU or just going back to OSU games and seeing him. The biggest thing, though, was like how he was interested in not only what you were doing professionally, but in the growth of your family. You know, I remember when Maya was born, my first child, she was born in Italy, and coach sends a letter, autographed Jordans, you know, and it was like every time the kids had a birthday, they got a birthday card, or, you know, he would call on your birthday and, you know, he would just call and just check on you and see how you're doing, kind of like Pete was alluding to. You know, it was just like the love for us. I felt like it didn't stop when we stopped playing. It continued on, you know, while he was functioning.
What about you? So Mace, you're obviously your thing is different. What was it like when you came back after the plane crash?
Oh man, it was emotional, obviously, for everybody. And you know, the Sonics were gracious enough to charter a plane, fly me in to Stillwater, tell me to stay as long as I needed to stay. And I remember sitting down and, you know, again, I think we all, you know, Coach Sutton was an extension of our family. It was kind of like your father away from home, you know, the guy that was making sure that you were taken care of and everything, and you would take care of your business as well. So, you know, you kind of looked, at least I looked at it like that. And to walk into his office, just, you know, him and I, he wanted to talk to me, and, you know, just kind of gave me a big hug and just broke down and started crying. And he told me kind of everything about making those phone calls and you know, how hard it was and how he wished it could be different and just crying. I had never seen Coach cry. So it was really, and I'm talking about a real cry, not a tear up. So it was just really emotional, man. And just to talk about, you know, once I got done playing, like, he was very important in the process. When we lost an NCAA tournament, you know, my draft process started fairly immediately. My workout, and Coach sat in every meeting. He asked all the questions. I asked him no questions. You know, him and my dad asked all the questions. I just listened. You know, he was very, you know, a very important part of who I decided to go with as an agent. And then, you know, watch my process, critique my game as I continue to play. But coming back from the plane crash, you know, he changed. That changed him, and I think that changed anybody, but that definitely changed him. He became a different person. Even when I talked to him, you can just tell he just wasn't – he brought it up all the time. It was impactful on us all. But for him, it literally changed. I think it changed who he was as a whole.
You know, the stroke thing was so sad. But I think it was most sad because – I don't know if you guys know this. So when Patsy died, he told me and Shauna told me that, like, 2 weeks before, they were sitting at dinner talking, and he was like, look, I'm going to go before you go. So if I have a stroke, I don't want anybody to see me like that. Just turn the machines off. And then, like, literally 2 weeks later, they're at Chili's, and she has a stroke. So, I mean, it was crazy. And then, of course, late in life, he had that. He had the stroke. Let's start with this. Pete, when he had his car crash and he went through all his personal stuff and it became very, very public, what did you think? What was it like for you personally?
I mean, it was pretty difficult to kind of hear, because, you know, you hear a lot of negative stuff, and, you know, I was kind of detached a little bit, but hear a lot of negative stuff in the news and people saying things. And, you know, for me, I knew, you know, half of it wasn't true. I didn't know what he was going through at the time. We all go through things, you know. So it was kind of just no different than watching that special on ESPN or whatever. And I kind of got a little pissed off about some things that were said about him, and just how people, even, you know, people you're around every day, just had a lot of negative stuff, because that's all they knew, this negative stigma about whether it was alcohol or whatever they perceived him to be or whoever they perceived him to be. And I just took it personal, and it bothered me. You know, I was kind of, you know, you constantly find yourself trying to defend him, because we know him. Most people don't. They just know what they write in the papers. And I mean, it was tough to sit through a conversation with guys kind of trying to bash, you know, Coach. And it was rough for everybody, I believe.
Lee, how about you?
It was tough, man. I was in Italy playing. And I remember calling the person, calling him and talking to him a couple of days after it happened. And it's kind of like what Pete said, man. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of people that they don't get Coach. You know, they see his persona, and they assume he's a certain way, but they don't understand how, you know, tenderhearted he is and the struggles that he dealt with and things like that. But it was definitely tough. It was hard, but the one thing that I took away from it was the way he handled the situation. You know, how he was accountable to his actions, how he, you know, he stood up, he faced the music. You know, he didn't make any excuses. He didn't run from anything. He didn't hide from anything. You know, I think that was a big takeaway for a lot of us. But yeah, I'm with Pete, man. It wasn't easy, you know, and watching the documentary and going through that emotion and just seeing his pitfalls and everything that he struggled with, definitely is tough to watch.
Yeah, no, I mean, and Mace, I know you've dealt with more addiction in your life, not you personally, but people around you. And I know it's a part of your life story, so you have a different outlook on it. But I can only tell you that if you guys remember, like, they had me go on SportsCenter, and I was like, look, Coach always taught us to be accountable. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got to be accountable for this. Like, I don't think he can coach at OSU anymore. Not because I don't love him. But and there's a lot of, you know, like, I was out of the family circle for like a year because of it. And then he called me and he was like, I was like crying because I felt so bad. Because everybody made me feel so bad for saying what I thought was the right thing. And he was like, I go, Coach, I'm sorry if you're mad at me. He's like, I'm not mad at you, son. You are the one that did wrong. And I was like, oh. And his whole thing was exactly what you were saying to me, which is like, you know, like, I was in a bad place and you got to be on some level accountable for it. He's like, you know, help me. He's like, you know, you could have recused yourself. And my thing was like, I can't recuse myself in like six weeks before or 6 months before Bob Huggins was on a recruiting visit and he had a DUI. And I was like, yo, man, you can't have a DUI represent the school. Like, you can't do that. And I can't say that about Bob Huggins, who I like, and not say it about Coach Sutton, who I love, because I love Coach Sutton. Anyway, he was unbelievable. Like, until he couldn't speak, he would always tell me, like, I have no problem with anything you ever said. It was my problems, not yours. You were just doing your job. Anyway, like, he was, but I will tell you that, like, my heart sank for him because we used to joke around about it. Pete used to joke around about that shit, right? Like, he would have a bad day and he'd be on your ass. Mm. He'd be like, oh shit, he drinking again. Like, and I was like, I don't even joke about that shit, right? And I don't know. I would guess anybody who has to call 10 families like that, that's hard on your heart. I don't know how you're a recovering alcoholic. Mace, what was that like for you to go through, considering how close you were with Coach?
Man, it was for me, it was difficult for us all, but it was extremely difficult for me, just because of the relationship and the bond and the relationship we continued to have, and the relationship that him and my dad and my stepmom and my mom, you know, had. Obviously, with my past with my mom, you know, and her addiction, you know, it really, you know, it hurt my feelings. It hurt my heart. And, you know, to be really transparent, honest, Doug, like, you know, I was kind of on board with a lot of other people. You know, I didn't care what happened, what he did. I understood that he was a grown man and he made decisions. But, you know, I would never speak on it. And you know, when things came out that were said by you, you know, for me personally, I was like, damn, that's family. Like, he did family like that. You know, so I was on board with everybody else. And that's just the honest truth. It just, you know, because I just would not expect that. But I do, you know, understand that, you know, you had a job and you can't hold favorites. You know, it is what it is. And the fact that Coach was okay and forgave that and he definitely took responsibility for it, just epitomized who Coach was. But man, I was right there with everybody else. I was like, damn, my guy did that. You know, he really shit on Coach like that. Like that. Yeah, I couldn't believe it, man. I was absolutely blown away, but I was more hurt because I thought that would just destroy Coach because we were all a family. And after having a bunch of conversations with him after the fact, after the accident, you know, I kind of was on board with you when you had your conversation with him that he said it was my issue. You know, it wasn't anybody else's problem. It was my problem. I made the mistake. I have to own up to it. And he apologized to me. He's like, I'm sorry, you know, that, you know, I did this as your coach. You know, I shouldn't be doing things like that. But yeah, man, it was hard because I just, you know, I grew up around a lot of people, close family members that were addiction for a long time. And it was the last thing I wanted to see anybody go through, and to see Coach go through that. And then also to see Sean go through it as well. Man, it was just, it hurt me. It hit really close to home for me.
Yeah, if I could do it all over again, you know, if I could do it all over again. And part of it is, you know, in full transparency, that night that it happened, I called Alex Weber, and Denise, of course, at the time was like the VP at the hospital, and actually like the president of the hospital. And so I knew something was up, and I was trying to help him. I was like trying to like, look, if this thing is bad, like, let's get out ahead of it. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out what the right messaging is. And, you know, kind of, you guys know how it all works. Like, everybody wanted to cover for Coach because nobody wanted to make him look bad. Right. And yep. I don't know if that was part of it, you know, because I do love Coach, and he is right. He did it wasn't that he embarrassed us, but it's like that's what he kind of became known for more than being a great coach. It's unfair,
right?
You know, and so I know there's a, like just a lot that goes into it, right? But the big kind of takeaway for me was, you know, I had never been in that situation before. And it was just a very weird, like I was trying to help them. They still, nobody was being honest with me. I knew what the truth was. Then they finally came out with like, everybody was trying to protect coach. And like, it's the cover up, not the crime. Like it was a bad thing that happened, but covering up makes it worse. Instead of going like, hey, look, he's alcoholic. He slipped, fell off the wagon. These things happen. He's going to be, thankfully everybody's going to be okay. Anyway. Yeah. I wish in hindsight, we had all like gotten on the phone together and be like, all right, what are we going to do? How are we going to like handle this? How should I handle this? But at the time where everybody was kind of disjointed, right. And not connected. B's playing in Italy. Right. Pete, I don't know if you were still playing at the time. Right. I'm working in Bristol, like everybody's somewhere different. And it was before we could all hop on calls like that. But I felt terrible. You know, I just remember walking away feeling awful because like I said, I felt like I said what needed to be said, but I don't know if I was the guy that needed to say it. And that was the hard part. Right? Like, I just didn't want like Jay Billis saying, hey, he shouldn't coach again. Like, well, Gottlieb didn't say shit. And I'm a straight shooter on everything else. It was a hard one for me. But we did kind of make amends. And, you know, I think like Sean and some of those others are more in the Mace kind of category where they were upset at the time. They're like, you know, as long as you two are good, that's all really that matters at the end. But it just sucks because I feel like for some reason, that's what kept them out of the Hall of Fame, which makes no sense to me. Right, like this is gonna drop tomorrow. Inducted into the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. Like he was an incredible coach. All right, so let's do this. Okay, I got two more for y'all. Okay, let me start with you, Mace. You played for a lot of people. You played a decade in the NBA. What made him a special coach from your perspective?
I mean, I think B said earlier, you know, the way he would kind of build you up and break you down, you know, it kept us all on our toes. You know, you never got a big head. There was never any, from what I knew on our team, I never felt that there was any arrogance. I think we all were a little cocky. We all thought that we can get things done, but it never hurt the team because he always kept that in check. You know, he never gave a beat. Even though Joe brings this up all the time, I still don't think Coach necessarily played favorites with me. Coach just sick Paul Graham on me instead of him doing it himself. You know, Coach knew how to get at certain people. He knew he couldn't overly yell at Joe because we would lose Joe. You know, but he knew he could, you know, jump on you, Doug, because you were just going to take that as motivation. And so he was very, very good about managing all of our personalities. But I think Brian said it best when he said he would build you up and then break you back down. And that kept us all, you know, focused on the team aspect as opposed to the individual.
All right. You play for a lot of people overseas, play for theater. You know, you played over a decade professionally. Why do you think he's a Hall of Fame coach?
I mean, look at his body of work. He's done it over four decades. He's won over four decades. The game changed, you know, right before his eyes while he's coaching. And he was able to coach at a high level. You know, look at the programs that he started, you know, in Idaho and what he built that into, and then going to Creighton and getting them to the NCAA tournament. And then basically, I mean, the thing is, man, is, you know, what he's done in Arkansas is phenomenal. You know, and then coming back to Oklahoma State and turning Oklahoma State into a powerhouse, you know, and getting the final.
But as a coach now, what do you, cause I would say for me coaching, like he knew how to get everybody, he knew how to press everybody's buttons. Like for Pete, he knew call Pete's dad that presses his button. I'd watch him get Mace to play, and his way, and Mace, I don't know if you realize he would do this, like, you wouldn't be playing very well in the first half, but you'd be playing hard, and he'd come into the locker room and be like, we need five guys to play as hard as Mason. Like, yo, Mace fucked up like five things in the first.
We need five guys to play as
hard as Brian, the last time you had a conversation with Coach, what do you remember about it?
I was going to bring this up. Remember, it was a few years ago. Remember when we went and saw him in Tulsa? And I think it was me, you, Joe, and Sean. He just had surgery, and he was in that rehab facility building the strength up, trying, you know, so he could get back home. And we went and picked him up Goldie's. Remember, I think, what was that, 4 or 5 years ago? So the thing was, is, you know, we all got together and we were talking, and I remember walking out, and you know how Coach is, he's the ultimate storyteller. And he was telling stories. And then I remember walking out, and remember he was still in a wheelchair. So he was at the entrance, the exit, and he kind of walked us out, you know, as we were leaving. And I remember this lady asking, who are those guys? And he said, those are my boys. You know, and that's something that I took away for a long time, because I mean, we were what, 15, 16 years removed playing for him, and he still felt the same way about us that he did when we were playing for him.
It's interesting, you know, I feel like I've always tried to be really reasonable. It's like, and I remember we played in Israel together. I remember a couple of times when he was with the Storm, we were together. Can't remember when it was, when we were back in Stillwater. And I just remember, like, bro, no matter what you think of me, Adrian Peterson was a way better player than me. He was
peak of ball, man.
Great fucking player, right? Like, one of the best players to ever play at OSU.
Agreed.
There was something about our group which connected with people. And connected with Coach. Like, I think the Final Four team was awesome, and he probably should have retired after that Final Four, right? Especially had they beaten Georgia Tech. You know, you get to the finals. I you know, it would have been amazing if he would have hung one up then. But whatever. But there was something about our group, our junior year and our senior year, which people – and I think it was Coach's connection with us. It was that it was a very deep, personal relationship that I'm not sure with the later teams he had as much, you know. It's just very interesting to me on how I agree. Maybe it's that we went by and saw him. Maybe it's that we kept in touch. Maybe it's our own kind of egos, our own heads trying to prove to ourselves how important we were. But I did feel like our group, like our 3 years, and Pete, you can attest to this, like, Your first 2 years were down years, right? And really, his only two down years at the school. And maybe it's because we got it back going. I'm not sure. I do feel like our group didn't get to a Final Four. And people are always like, oh, did you get to a Final Four? You play with Country. Or you play with John Lucas. Like, no, I didn't play any of those groups. We didn't win the league. We didn't go to the Final Four. Won a lot of games. I felt like we resonated more with him and with fans than other people, than other groups.
I would agree with that for sure. Because my first year, that group was kind of – we had some JUCO players. We had come in. We had some seniors. We had one freshman. So it was a kind of real different group. But when you guys – when that freshman class with Mace and those guys showed up, that was, what, five or six guys. And then when you and Brian came in, it was – the group was real close, tight-knit my senior year, junior, senior year, pretty much. We all kind of hung out together. We all kind of like mine. We did the same stuff. We were just a tighter group, I thought, you know. And then, of course, after I left, you know, you guys, your senior, you took it to another level. But it was just a tighter group those last 2 years. And plus, everybody rebuilds at some point. And that, my first 2 years, that's exactly what was going on, this rebuilding process for the program. So, unfortunately, I had to go through that, but it was fun, and we came out on the end of it. So
when your girls get older, Pete, and people start to go like, hey, you played for a Hall of Fame coach. Like, what would be your, how would you help them understand what made him special as a coach through your experience?
Actually, funny you said that, because we got a, my daughter's a volleyball player and she has an old school coach. I'm talking about old school, like rough dude. And she's going through that this year with, well, she lets this player, she doesn't, he doesn't yell at this girl. He doesn't yell at this girl. He always yells at me. And I go, well, here's the talent of being a coach. You got to know how to handle each individual player. Like my daughter, you can yell at her. She don't care. She's like, whatever. She's still going to smile and have a good time. Great personality. There are some girls that are really talented. You can't get onto them. You can approach them and critique them. But I like Mace, you couldn't really jump on Mace like that. You could pull him to the side, give him really good criticism, and encourage him, and he'll go do whatever for you. But yelling at him wasn't going to get anything out of him. Me, I didn't really care. Like, that's fine. As long as I'm out on the court, you can yell all you want, as long as you're playing. I don't care. If I'm getting my shots, whatever. But kind of like with Joe, you couldn't really yell it, come down on Joe like that. He just didn't receive it that way. So we're dealing with that as you speak. And I would just say Coach was very good at noticing who he can lean on, who he could ride, who he can make an example out of, and who he had to, you know, caught him do things a certain way. And he got the best out of all his players, 1 through 15, how many ever it was.
Coach used to always say this, too. This is something I take away, especially in the role that I'm in now, is you treat them all the same, but you coach them different. I think Pete was alluding to that. You know, you got to know who your guys you can get on to maybe send a message to that one guy that you can't really, that really doesn't take hard criticism, you know, but he's seeing if you can get on the best player, you can get on this guy, he can take it, you know, it allows him to be able to coach some of these other guys that need to be coached different. So, I mean, that's one thing I've taken away from Coach, you know, and he used to say this all the time, especially, you know, after I finished playing and things like that is, you know, you treat them all the same off the court, but on the court, you coach them different. You got to find out what buttons some of the guys need to be pushed, and some guys you can't push as hard. But at the same time, you've got to be effectively coaching them. And I think that's something that he's done a really, really, really good job of. You know, over the time that I played for him, the time that we played for him, is just watching the guys that he can lean on a little bit harder versus the guys that he couldn't. You know, and Doug, you were bringing up a point about our team. You know, one thing that I thought that you know, goes unnoticed with coach's career is the guys that he got. He didn't have a lot of McDonald's All-Americans. You know, he really didn't have a lot of guys that played in the league, played in the NBA and things like that. He got a lot of guys, a lot of second chance guys, a lot of bounce back guys, you know, guys that needed another opportunity to go to university and get a second chance and things like that. I mean, if you look at our team over our career, I mean, how many transfers did we have that were able to come back in and play and have some success for him? Coach was a master at getting transfers and getting JUCO guys to come in and play as a team.
Or even guys that other people missed on, right? You know? Or,
right.
You know? Pete, did Arkansas offer you?
Not early. They didn't. They wanted me to wait because they were trying to get, I think it's Marlon Towns or something. But Coach told me, if Arkansas offers you a scholarship, you should go there. Because after basketball, you being from the state, that's going to be so much more valuable to you playing at a high level for that university in that state. But if they don't, this is the next best place for you. So he told me that on my home visit. And I'm like, well, hell, I don't know. Do you want me? I guess you don't really want me either. So that kind of left a bad taste. But I understood, you know, what he was saying, and it worked out well. That's kind of probably why I ended up there, because he was very truthful with me about, you know, who I was and my chances at Oklahoma State. So
when he gets inducted, like what will go through your mind when you're seeing, and he's not here, obviously. So I think they have three different presenters. Bill Self's going to be one of them, you know, when he gets presented, like what will be going through your mind, Pete?
Just well-deserved, long time coming. You know, we all go on a journey, you know, whatever it is, whatever profession you're in. But for him to I would say be left out for as long as he was because of maybe perceptions or a few stories that could have been true, couldn't have been true, whatever. I would just be well-deserved lifetime achievement award pretty much. And it should have happened sooner. I wish it would happen a lot sooner.
Dude, that's the thing is, it's not just that I'm glad that he got recognized when he was still alive. But I wish people would, had they put him in sooner before he had the stroke. Like, he was such a dynamic personality.
Yeah.
I mean, such a dynamic personality. Like you said, like, we were all scared to death of him.
Yep.
Scared to death. Right? Like, scared of an old ass man. But you're like, I ain't stepping to him.
Yeah.
And he was funny. He was gregarious. He took over a room with his personality. I think that's the part that upsets me is that he got left out so long that we missed. It happened with Tex Winter, too. Tex Winter is one of the funniest dudes you've ever met. But by the time he got in, he was a shell of his former self.
Yep.
You know, and they wait so long. You don't understand what made him him. And what made Coach was his personality. Like you said, his ability to understand the room. Now, I remember, I don't know if you guys remember this. My first year there, B's first year there, we flew to Missouri, right? And we're going to play and, you know, against Norm Stewart. And our flight was late getting in because they had an ice storm coming in. We land and we go practice at the old Hearn Center. And then we got to go get something to eat. So we go to Olive Garden. And they were like, they came out, they're like, sir, coach, listen, our kitchen's closed. And it was like, you know, like 10:15 on a Tuesday night, we had a game on a Wednesday, right? And like out of nowhere, he flipped and goes like, you tell me, Eddie Sutton, his boys are hungry. And I'm telling you, I swear to God, like, you know, the managers at those, they don't do anything. They just boss people around, right? The manager's back there in the kitchen cooking up spaghetti and breadsticks. And we had ourselves a hell of a meal. And then, Pete, I don't know if you remember this one. Our first conference, I want to say our first, but now one of our first conference road games, we actually lost at Baylor, which was embarrassing because Baylor was so shitty at the time. On a double clutch from half court bank shot, and I got benched in double overtime, we lost. What I remember about that trip, other than that shot and getting benched, was the night before, you and I were sitting having dinner at the restaurant. And he and Patsy saddle up to us. Yep. And he just starts talking about Kentucky.
It was weird.
It was like out of nowhere. It wasn't like, hey, coach, what happened to Kentucky? Hey, coach, tell me a story. Like nothing. Like, he just sat there and goes, how are you guys doing? Like, let me tell you about what happened to Kentucky.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Okay.
We were like, what the hell is this dude doing? Did you ask? I didn't ask him.
I didn't ask him anything. He's like, Joe B. Hall had 365 tickets. We're like, okay. Like, Joe B. Hall had 365. You know how many tickets I got? We're like, I don't know, coach. 12 tickets. He's like, what do you think 365 tickets means in Lexington, Kentucky? I was like, that's a lot of friends and family, coach. He's like, no. It's like you give two to the car dealers, you give two to the grocery store, two to every restaurant, so guys don't have to pay for anything. There ain't no cheating. You just give them all the tickets. It's like, so I don't have, I can't, they cut me back to 12 tickets. All these people get mad. We basically said it was a setup because people weren't getting their tickets anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the short version, Pete. Is that the accurate tale of what he was telling us?
Yeah, he went into that and he went into the whole story, which we were sitting there for like an hour and a half. And I said, what the hell is he talking about? Like, I didn't ask you this. I don't care. I'm here, coach. You're not recruiting me. I'm here. And he just kept talking. We were looking at each other like, man, I don't really care about how the money got to this person, that person. It was a strange conversation, a one-way conversation.
It was not a conversation. It was a dissertation.
Exactly.
You know, or it was basically him presenting his case. It was very, very weird. Very weird. Okay, so here's the question. Pete, did you ever get anything that wasn't by the book?
No, I wasn't that good, so I didn't get nothing. No.
Get the fuck out of here. You weren't that good. You're third all-time lead scorer.
I didn't come my way. No, I don't. No. I mean,
you
I know some other
who did.
No, huh?
You know anybody who did?
No? I mean, if I did, I wouldn't say, but no. I mean, yeah, I know a couple people probably, but, you know, maybe.
Basketball players?
Nah, basketball player, football, maybe.
Yeah, it ain't basketball. No,
I will not get into football and what happened there.
But no, basketball, no. No,
the only thing we got was ass chewings.
Yeah.
And do better talks.
Well, we you got $10 an hour if you got to work for Rusty in the summer,
true.
Right?
Yeah. And here's the whole deal with that. Remember, like this happened where you had to get your paycheck from Coach. Rusty sent the paycheck to Coach.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to make sure everything was on the up and up and that you were working the hours that you were supposed to be working. So it wasn't like anything and everything Coach had his hand on, man. I mean, he knew everything that was going on.
I used to say if you fart on campus, they smell in the office. Right?
Yep. You can't do anything, man.
Yeah.
Okay, but I got the all-time. I don't know if you guys know this. So, before my senior year, I went to Greece with some hoop group All-American team, right? So they couldn't connect you with boosters, but they could tell you who the boosters to call were, and you had to find their number. Anyway, so I was trying to make some. So the boosters end up illegally paying for your trip, right? But then I needed some spending money. So Coach is like, oh, I got some jobs for you. Come out to the house. So I go out to the house. I saw him in some shorts. Okay. I'd never seen him in shorts before or since. And he was in some like Bermuda shorts, like, you know, that plaid ugly shit that my dad would wear. Some Bermuda shorts, some tall white socks, and some like those coaching white and orange sneakers. And then like an Oklahoma State polo, you know. And I go out there, and he's like, he had one of those. It was a push mower, but it was like a, it was like a self-propelled. It wasn't like the old school. It actually helped kind of go along. It was a good mower, right? But he's like, all right, you need to mow my ass. And I was like, Coach, that's a big ass lawn now. That's like $50. Oh, I'll give you $25 for it. It's like $25, Coach. That's like $50.
It's gonna take you 5 hours to do it.
I go, here's what I'll do. You do this one. That I think Randall Dickey was staying in his rent house, which is around the corner. Hey, do that one, and I'll give you $50. I go, Coach, I'm not doing that for $50. That's like my whole day. All right, I'll give you $70. I'm like negotiating with Coach, right?
Yeah.
He goes, here's what I'll do, okay? We're going to order some lunch. I'll order you some lunch, and I'll give you $75. So that's fair. I was like, all right, Coach, whatever. So I did that, and then he got me like a bunch of mowing jobs like right around his house, and again, same thing where he wouldn't let them, the other people, pay me. Like, he wanted me to do it. And then he'd have those people call and say they were happy with what I did and make sure I did it the right way. Like, did you weed eat? I was like, yeah, weed eating. He's like, did you weed eat the right? I was like, Coach, are you on me about my weed eating?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? It's 130 degrees. And then he'd give me $25 in cash. And be like, all right, you know. So, he was a trip. Okay, give me one game memory. I got a couple game memories. Okay. I don't know if you remember this. So we play Kansas State my sophomore year. This was, Pete, you remember when Manny Dyes dunked on Brett so hard, I saw Brett's soul leave his body. It was filthy, right? But if you remember that game, K-State wasn't very good. And Coach, he also had this thing where, in addition to knowing people who to get on and who to lay off, he would kind of know how to push our buttons as a team. And I can't remember if it was our senior year or if it was the sophomore year, but he came in at halftime in that Kansas State game. We were playing like shit. And I was like, oh, he's going to jump us at halftime. And then he sits down on like the table, like, oh, we'll be all right. We'll win this game. Oh, you know, like totally chill. And we all look around like, what the hell? We thought we were gonna get reamed. So I remember that just because it was like a psychological mind fuck, if you will. Like, I didn't know where he was going with that one, right? And then I remember him going crazy my senior year. We play UT San Antonio. He used to do this for Pete and for Mace. We'd play those terrible teams, right? Start of the year, and we'd be winning by 30. And he's running like everything for them. And we come in the locker room after the UT San Antonio game, and I was like, Coach, why are we running all this shit for Pete Mace? He's like, you want to know why? I was like, yeah, I want to know why. He's like, because we played Kansas and Oklahoma, that's who's going to win us the game, brother. And that was his kind of working theory, which is he wanted you to – like, we didn't run really, you know, complicated shit, but he wanted you to know, like, who is shooting the ball, where they're shooting the ball, and if somebody else is open, it was going to be for a layup.
Trying to think of a game. I'll go back to my first
– Give me your favorite game. I'll go back to my freshman year of
something that always stuck out to me. We were terrible. We went into Kansas, and the coach didn't want to be there. You know, they had Paul Pierce, all these superstars, and we were just struggling. And I think I had 27 or 28 just playing, you know, just trying to do the best you can. I didn't know any better as a freshman. And I remember running off the court, he kind of grabbed me and hugged me and just he whispered in my ear, and he said, told me hell of a job. He said, hey, but we got you some help coming next year, so you keep getting better. And that right there kind of all – because that's the only time he ever, you know, showed me any kind of sympathy towards anything. But I remember that moment. And also, we're playing Kansas again on the flip side of that. He never really got on to me during the game, but he lost it on me at halftime. I don't know if y'all remember. Paul Pierce was his junior year. He was killing me. Sean was yelling at me. Coach was yelling at me. And we never won the game, but I just remember him jumping on me and just riding my ass and – it didn't work, but I got his point. I just remember that sticking out, but I never had any instances with him during the game where he really got on to me because I guess I was used to it. I don't know. But as far as game memories, those are the only things that stick out. And I know it's one extreme to the next, but that's kind of what sticks with me. Always against Kansas.
The Kansas thing I remember, and you guys can attest to this, I think B and I talked about this in the past, was if you remember that game against Pierce and the Friends, you're – junior year, right? They were like ranked fourth in the country,
right?
And we had won the South, and we were picked dead last. And coach comes in the day before the game, and you remember he always knew the line, right? He always knew this betting line, and it didn't matter if the betting line we were favorites or we were underdogs. It was we were screwed either way, right?
Yeah.
If we were underdogs, you'd be like, see. Vegas doesn't even think you're any good, right? Vegas thinks they're 6 points better than you on our home floor, right? And if you're a favorite, it's like, oh, Vegas doesn't know anything. You guys are favorite. You guys got the big head because you looked in the paper and saw your favorite. Like, we didn't ever – Joe might have looked in the paper and saw the favorite. The rest of us didn't. Anyway, so he comes in. And, again, I don't know if you guys remember this, but he goes, man, right before the game. No, it was the day before the game. Man, Kansas is better than you. We're like, what? Kansas is better than you. Like, they got Pierce, Friends. They got, you know, they got Nick, Gregory. He's like going through a list. We're all getting fucking pissed, right? I don't like Robertson. Pete ends up hating Robertson because he got drafted when he woke up from surgery, right? I mean, you know, I grew up with Chenoweth, all these dudes, right? And but the last thing you want your coach to say the day before you play Kansas on ABC is they're better than them. Man, they're better than them. When they got Pierce and Friends, they're about 8-12 points better. It's like, but I coach against Roy a long time. Like, brother, he's going to take them both out at the same time. When he takes them both out at the same time, we're better than them. And you go back and watch that game. They play it on whatever ESPN Classic or whatever they do now in the news, they play the classic games. Go back and watch. So we started Tommy Warner that game. It was senior night. It was not a good decision.
T-Dub shot that damn thing three times before he could get him out of the game.
Yes.
Coach almost had to call timeout to get him out.
Then I came in, and I was fucking terrible. And we're down like 12-2 to start the game. Right? And the whole place like, And they're running us off the court. And then all of a sudden, like midway through the first half, here comes those two gazelles out of the game at the same time. And we all look at the coach, and he's like, got that smirk on that Eddie Sutton smirk on his face, like, I told you you're going to take them both out. And sure enough, we're down like, I don't know, 4 or 5 at the half or something, right? We cut it. Second half, same shit. But it was more that like told us what was going to happen, when it was going to happen, how it was going to happen. And you're like, holy shit, this guy's right. It was an amazing thing. Amazing. I also did like that. And I was never really that guy. I wish I was Pete or Mace, because those dudes literally never came out of the game. That's how I want my best, like, they're my best players. Why would I take them out of the game? That's stupid. And in the big games, those dudes would play like 38 minutes. So, all right, B, your favorite in-game coaching.
A&M, man. Texas A&M, our senior year, we were rolling. Remember?
Fucking lost. Triangle.
I know, but we were rolling up until that point. We were on a nice little winning streak. I think we had a 2-game lead in the Big 12. Everything was going right for us. We go down to A&M. They absolutely suck. Remember the end of the game? It was just bad, man. I mean, we fell apart. We couldn't execute. I missed probably 3 or 4 front ends of 1-on-1s within the last minute. So we end up losing. And I remember getting in the locker room, and you know how we traveled, right? We had the 3 vans, and then we had the 3 planes that we flew on separately. And then, you know, the seniors, we all flew with Coach. So in the locker room, Coach.
Not one time.
Yeah, I know you didn't. I know you didn't. Well, Coach is in there chewing our ass, you know, like all over us. And the only thing I could think of is like, I mean, I had a badass game. I didn't play very well. So I'm thinking, shit, I got to – the whole way, the whole timing of this is going to be how I get out of the locker room and I get on one of those vans and I get a good seat so I can be the first one off the van and the first one on the airplane so I don't have to sit in the jumper seat across from Coach and Sean, because you know they always sit next. Yeah, you want to be in the back of the plane. So the whole time, Coach is jumping my ass. You know, you played like shit. You didn't make free throw, like all this stuff, right? He's all over us. So we get to the van, and it's a mad dash to the van. So I get in the van, and I'm the last one in the van, and I'm like, shit, this, we know we got a 10, 15-minute ride to the airport. And the whole time I'm thinking, last one on the van means last one off the van means I'm sitting across from Coach and Sean on the plane ride home, and I didn't play very well. So we get off, it sucks. Don't it, Pete? It's terrible.
They look at the stat sheet and they look at you.
Yeah. So here's the thing, man. We get on the plane.
Oh, we get on
the
terrible.
Plane. I'm the last one on the plane, man.
You guys are terrible.
The last one on the plane, man. And this is Coach's effect. He could just look at you and he just had that. I don't know what it was, man, but it was just the way he could look at you sometimes would kind of kill you a little bit, you know. So I get on the plane, I'm in that jumper seat, and there's not a lot of leg room, and Sean and Coach are sitting across from me. I'm sitting sideways, you know, and I've got my book bag with me, you know, I've got my backpack with me and everything else. So I'm searching for something to pull out. So I'm pulling out books and everything. So we take off, and Coach has got his glasses on, you know, and how he wore them on his nose, on the tip of his nose, and he's got the newspaper spread out, right? And you can't see his face. And then Sean, like Pete said, Sean's always staring at the stats. So Sean's staring at the stats and looking at me with his bottom lip out, just giving me the death stare, right? So I try to move my feet. Coach has got the paper. He can't even see me. I'm sitting probably 4 feet across from him, right? As soon as I try to move my feet, Coach takes his feet and puts them in the spot where I was going to put them. And it kind of kicks me out of the way. And then every 10 minutes, he'd pull that newspaper down and just stare at me. He'd stare at me for about 30 seconds, just look at me. It wouldn't say anything. He'd just pull his glasses down and just stare at me and then put the newspaper up. So the whole ride back, I'm thinking, damn, this is uncomfortable, man. This is not fun. What's he thinking? What's going to happen? So we get back to Stillwater and we land. And I think Steve Sosa, one of the managers, comes up to me and they were like, hey, Coach wants to see you first thing in the office tomorrow morning. And I'm like, shit, I got to go through this whole 24-hour deal thinking about what he's going to say to me and what he, I'm replaying the game. I'm trying to, like, figure out what went wrong. I'm trying to figure out what he's going to say, what he's going to do, everything else. So it was the fact of, like, him having that power and just that mindset and that control sometimes over us to where he could get us thinking about things and what he was going to say to us and what he was going to do to us, because we knew – you know, we knew how demanding he was, you know, and how strict he was as a coach. But I got in there that morning and I'm thinking I'm going to get lit up and everything else. And it wasn't anything. It was more of a do better talk, like, hey, let's refocus, you know, let's get your mind right. you know, that game happened. It was over. But I went through hell for 24 hours agonizing over what the hell he was going to say to me that next morning.
Speaking of the Duke better talks, those are the most uncomfortable things ever. Oh, yeah. And so for people who don't know what a do better talk is, coaches say, like, you need to come out to my office and have a do better talk. And he had this long sofa, right? And then he'd have all the minions, all the assistants lined up. And one would have talked to every one of your professors, right? One checked on your, like, dorm room. One knew who you were dating and what you were doing. And then coach, and then every one other one was talking about your workouts and what you've been doing, right? They talk to the strength coach. They talk to who you worked out. They find out about your girlfriend, who you're dating, your professor. They search your room for booze or for weed or whatever, right? And then they would all just kill you, like make you feel like you're the worst human being on earth. And then coach would be like, all right, well, listen, we need to do better, right? That was his whole do better. We need to do better. So I won't say the former Cowboys name. But he came after us. He came after us. And maybe he will out himself at some point. I don't know if you guys know this story. But he had a do better talk. And they were all crushing him. And, you know, he had, like, parking tickets. Like, literally, you know, again, they knew everything. Parking tickets, you name it. And he's like, what do you have to say for yourself? And he's like, coach, it's the demon.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, no, well, hell, son, we'll take you to church. That devil had it. No, coach. It's the demon. And he was pointing to his junk. Like, coach, man, there's so many beautiful girls in Oklahoma State. And I can't just, you know, like, I just love it, coach. And, like, you know, I'm playing and all these girls are all into me. And he's like, oh. And I won't say the guy's name. So he's like, coach, don't say nothing to nobody. But he's like, oh, I would never say anything, right? So I was broadcasting games at that time. But I know the story. So I'm literally sitting, you know, like a couple seats over from the bench. And they're playing at Baylor. And this particular player would do the thing that would frustrate coach the most, any coach the most, which is you draw up a play that you practiced. And then you come out and you go like, hey, man, what are we in, right?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, what did we just talk about, right? What are we in? Yo, dog, what are we in? Anyway, he turns to him and clears the – and, like, Baylor wasn't full back then, right? So everybody could hear, he goes, you need to stop thinking with that demon. And dude, coaches on the bench are dying because, they, you know, he basically bared his soul that – you know, his junk was getting him in trouble because that's all he could think about. And then coach literally outed him the very next game. That's that do better talk was supposed to be private and and confidential. And it was never confidential.
Yeah, ever. Never. Never, ever.
Ever.
The demon.
Ever, ever. It was all of the demon. He needed to stop thinking with the demon. I think Brian knows who that is. Pete, I'll tell you who that is.
Yeah.
Okay. True story.
Obviously, he was a good player.
Yes.
Huh? He was a good player.
Okay. Good player.
He was a good player. He's a good player. And yeah, he's a good player and a good dude and a funny dude at that. And I think we all kind of suffered from that demon complex at some point. B, did you ever see anybody get taken care of?
No, man. No. I mean, we all worked together. You know, I mean, we all had the same summer job, you know, out there with Rusty Shaw. No, man, never have I seen anybody get anything and coach was always coach. I mean, coach knew everything that was going on at school, you know, so there's no way that would happen under his watch, I believe, you know, what I've experienced, there's no way. I mean, you know, you hear of other things, other places and stuff like that, but not at Stillwater, not with coach.
Last thing is this. I think that, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, I remember losing the NCAA tournament and feeling like I let him down. Right? Like, Brian, you were sick, but we were, and I end up getting sick. But Pete, I don't know if you felt this way when we lost in Indy, but I mean, that's really kind of the power of him. Like I wanted so badly to win for him and for us more than for myself, you know? Like that's how kind of close we were, but also how much we thought of him. Even all the mental, whether it was mind games or motivation or whatever he was doing. Like I remember losing our last game, sitting in Syracuse in that locker room going like, man, I let him down. Like I played bad and we lost in the last time I'll ever play for him. Do you guys feel that way?
I would say, yeah. Who did we play? Auburn, my senior year?
Yeah.
Auburn, yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough – because that was a game we should have
won.
I mean, we beat Syracuse, I think, which that was – I think that was more of a challenge, but we should have beat Auburn, and it was a letdown for everybody. It was my senior year, but, I mean, it was just a game. We were just a better team than Auburn, I thought. And, I mean, it was definitely a letdown for Coach because you hear all the time how – you know, he's never won a national title. Not saying we were at that level, but you know, tournament, you never know what could have happened.
I think we were at that level. The only thing he didn't do that year, he only did it once, was play small, right? Because remember that year we had Glendon, and Glendon would screw everything up because he couldn't guard anybody, right? So we had to put in that matchup zone to try and hide him. And then Joe got hurt against Kansas. And so he wasn't playing that much. But we played Texas that year and lost at home. And we had a big comeback at the end because we played small. And we played Mace at the five. Like, can you imagine that team with Mace at the five? And essentially that's sort of what we did when Brian became a starter the next year. Right? Brian at times was a five. When Fred would come out, we'd have Mace at the four or whatever. That was an impossible matchup for dudes. But that was the thing that year was – we had our numbers were a little bit off with me, you, Joe, and Glendon, and trying to find minutes for five dudes, and Mace was still playing the four then, but to play small. That was the only thing in that year which I thought he could have done that he didn't do.
Yep. Would agree.
Well, look, man, I love having you guys on. It was awesome. I'm gonna watch like you will Saturday, but I will. As much as I'll think about him, I'll think about like all of our crazy shit together.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, now you're like 20 years removed or whatever from it. And it still feels like yesterday. And, you know, I'm not sure I would change much anything of it, you know?
You know, and I end with this, Doug, real quick. You know, we were up in Lawrence this weekend playing basketball with my son's AAU team. And we had a little downtime, so we got to go through Fog Allen and kind of hang out in there. And it was really cool, man, for me to sit with my son. And there's no one in Fog Allen. And we're sitting in there and we're talking about – he's asking me questions like, Dad, you played in here. What was it like? You know, and I brought up the game our junior year when we lost, you know, on that bogus call from half court. But, you know, and then he started asking about time at OSU and about playing for Coach. You know, it was, I mean, we spent 45 minutes in there. And the thing is like, I feel like, you know, we were disappointed at the end of our career by not helping him achieve his ultimate goal of winning the national championship. But I still think to this day, we still fight for him. You know, I still think to this day, you know, when he wouldn't get the call to be in the Hall of Fame and things like that, how disappointed it was us and how vocal we were, you know, making sure that, you know, whatever we had to do to get him on the radar or people keep talking about him to ultimately getting him in the Hall of Fame. You know, I mean, he's and like I share with my son. I'm like, you know, he changed me for the better, not as a basketball player, but as a person, as a man. I mean, he's opened up doors for me, you know, with my career and things like that by playing for him and playing in the structure and playing in the discipline and going through all the things that he put us through over the course of our career. You know, and that's what I told him. I'm like, man, if you get an opportunity to play for someone like a Coach Sutton and get the opportunity to play college basketball, it goes by really fast. But the crazy thing is your memories and your friendship and your bond with your teammates will be lifelong lasting. And that's what I'm really appreciative of. You know, I haven't talked to Pete in a while, but just, you know, seeing Pete on the call you know, and, you know, I keep in contact with you a lot and then talking to Mace, it just brings back all those memories of us being together and playing and thinking back of, you know, all the ups and downs we had of it. And like you said, you wouldn't have changed anything. I probably wouldn't have done either. You know, I love the experience that I had playing for Coach and playing at Oklahoma State.
If I could do it again, I would have had more open and honest conversations with him, you know? And, you know, just again, if I could, because those conversations you have when you're done playing for him were so honest. I wish I would have had that. Wish I would have been able to walk in and go like, "Hey coach, you know, if you would just let me shoot open shots and not take me out, like I can manage."
Guess what would have happened if you said that? I would have paid good money to hear you have that conversation with him when we were playing, because your ass would have been sitting.
I would have tried to negotiate a deal. Like,
wouldn't have been negotiating shit.
If I just don't take threes, will you not take me out? You know, I just don't take threes. So, but it was pretty special. Yeah, you're right. It just does open doors. Like the second you say you played for him, people are like, "Oh, you played for Eddie Sutton? Oh hell, that's all." I'll leave with this, and you guys can test it. He used to say, a lot of times in really shitty long practices, when he'd be rambling, he'd say, "You think this is hard? If you can do this, you can do anything."
Correct.
You know what?
Yep.
I've been through, Pete, you've been through some shit, right? Yep. In your career.
Yep.
B, you've been through a bunch of shit. I've been through it all. And you know what? He was right.
Yep. I honestly believe that. Totally believe that.
Nothing harder, nothing more rewarding. And oh yeah, by the way, it actually prepares you for life. Which is kind of how I try and coach kids now, which is like, hey, if I'm super easy on you and I tell you like it's okay to not do something, then I'm failing in preparing you not just for high school or college basketball, but for life, you know? And so, you know, he can't make us perfect people, but he did prepare us for the hard times in life, right? So,
correct.
Hey, I love you guys. I gotta go. I got a radio show. You're the best. I'll catch up with you both really shortly, and thanks for doing this for me.
All right, boy, love you, dude, man. I'll let you guys.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. I wanted to back end this with a little discussion about the NBA. As LeBron still struggles to recover from the high ankle sprain, the Lakers look like they're destined for the play-in game. I don't think that's the death knell to the Lakers. Like, I understand that their kind of mojo was down a couple of days ago, but now that Anthony Davis is back humming and playing well, granted, you want LeBron to be right, you want him to be in game shape, and it's going to be really hard to have him start playing against the Pacers and then have him ready to go for the play-in games. But, and you play completely differently when you play with LeBron as opposed to playing without LeBron. That said, I don't think Phoenix can beat him. I think that Phoenix, it's a bad matchup for Phoenix. And with that in mind, I'm very much intrigued by the idea that Phoenix should have done everything they could to avoid the Lakers. I don't know if they can. The Lakers keep winning games. Could they potentially climb out of the play-in game? They could. Will they? Probably not. But I think that's not the worst news in the world. The reason they don't want to be in those play-in games is really, really simple. It's the wear and tear on their bodies, not necessarily any one game or any one series. The wear and tear on their bodies is going to be really, really, really tough. Really tough. But not a death knell by anyone's estimation. Anyone's. So I think the Lakers are still, I don't want to say good to go, but if you want to say they're a favorite, no one's going to argue with you because they won it last year and on paper, very good talent. And they're trying to figure out how to use Drummond and AD together. Now they got to have Drummond and LeBron and AD together, as well as what do they do with Kuzma? How do they play Schroeder? What does Schroeder look like when they get to the playoffs? Remember, they badly needed Rondo last year, and Schroeder is more talented and younger than Rondo, but Rondo's lived through it and done it, kind of been through it, you know, been there, done that sort of deal. And so with that in mind, I, I, I do think that there's a lot of unknown with Dennis Schroeder and how he's going to play here late in the season and into the playoffs. And especially he's going to be coming off a quarantine shutdown or a COVID shutdown. It's the only thing that could be health and safety protocols translate roughly into that. Like that element to it is really interesting. But the Lakers and the Suns, I don't like. I love the Lakers if, in fact, they match up against the Suns, which it feels like they're on a collision course with. All right, well, listen, enjoy this weekend's Hall of Fame festivities. Remember when you watch Eddie Sutton get inducted, some of the stories and thoughts of my teammates and our experience in playing for a legend. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.